everybody, on the night before New Year's Eve. Welcome to the Molloy Show tonight. And I have to say that all 3 hours tonight are sponsored by Holly Hunter. For the first hour, Holly Hunter writes, "Happy birthday to John Mesikelski." John Mesikelski, from his girlfriend Holly, who loves him very much. That's sweet. That's very sweet. Holly, happy birthday to John Mesikelski. Thanks, Holly. We're going to be talking about Holly all night, right? Yes, we are. Hey, we'll be off Thursday night and Friday night, and what we're going to do on the program those two nights is just run rebroadcasts. I think New Year's Eve we'll be doing the Christmas Eve program, right? And tomorrow night, I'm not sure. We'll come up with something. I was, right before the program, I'm watching Rachel's program on MSNBC. Of course, she's off. And Sam Cedar's been filling in Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, which I think is kind of cool. Sam and I go back, way back. And as one of his guests tonight, Sam had Hartman on, Tom Hartman. And Tom and I go way back. Hartman and I were on the same, back during the IE America days. Remember that? Oh, my God. But what was so funny is, you know, since I know both these guys, to see Sam all dudeed up with the coat and the tie, okay. But to see Hartman shaved to go on MSNBC, I can't believe it. You know how scruffy he always looks, right? With you know, a shirt and a, maybe a jacket and 3 days' growth of beard on his face. But there's my boys. There's my peeps on Rachel's program tonight, just sitting there looking like dudes, talking all serious and, way to go, boys. Way to go, boys. What do we got tonight? We have a lot of stuff, believe it or not. If you watch the news, whether it's network news or cable news, the only story going on right now is snow in New York. Snow in New York. Now, they are also talking about mudslides and rain and everything in L.A. on the West Coast. But New York and the West Coast, and that's it. Makes sense to me. Last night we were talking about a breach in the circular current in the Gulf of Mexico that feeds into the Gulf Stream and makes living in northwestern Europe possible, especially in the British Isles. Were it not for the Gulf Stream, of course, I mean, take a look at a flattened out map and look at what latitude the UK is actually on. And then look across the Atlantic to the corresponding area, and it's a wonder anybody can live in the UK at all. But we were talking about that, about a breach as a result of the Gulf oil spill. Now, you know, I'm a sucker for just pulling stories off the internet sometimes or reading what people send me without doing any checking. But I've got a pretty good research staff that works for free. You know, there's Michael in Roswell, New Mexico. There's Irish Dave. There's Prairie 2. And you know who you are. Those are the three that usually, bada-bing, bada-boom. You know, they get something in real quick. Who else? Anyway, I got this from Prairie 2 regarding the Gulf Stream. He writes, "The Gulf Stream conveyor is being disrupted by fresh water from Greenland. It's the weight difference between fresh and salt water that is interfering with the pump, so-called, south of Greenland. This is where the seawater coming up from the south cools and plunges to deep water as it becomes more dense and heavier. This draws more water from behind it in the Gulf Stream and forces the water to circulate. Fresh water is much lighter and won't take the plunge, and the pump is losing its prime because everything in Greenland is melting. Once it stops, once this circular flow stops, it won't start again until enough water is tied up by a new ice age to raise salinity enough to change the ocean dynamic. Only 1,000 to 50,000 years, give or take. The last time this happened, it only took 2 years to start the ice age. Now, the morons, the unthinking, the unable to think, the right-wingers will tell you, well, see, there's no global warming. When, in fact, the whole thing is being triggered by global warming. I got a couple of emails about blue. For some reason, blue, our caller from all over the world, depending on where he's at, he really stirs he stirs Americans up, doesn't he? I got two emails that are representative of both sides of blue's influence on the audience to this program, anyway. I'd like to see Blue be on Rachel Maddow's program sometime. That would be fun, wouldn't it? Or Oberman's program. But anyway, Kay Petrini, our education correspondent, wrote, and so did one of the philosophers who listens to this program, and he is a social philosopher, Tom in Joshua Tree, California. We don't have no dumb peoples listening to this program. And some of you are too smart by half. And I mean that as a compliment, you know. Anyway, Kay wrote, Mike, I'm not going to bother repeating all the items that appall me about Blue every time he calls, except to say that he comes across as the most self-absorbed, arrogant jerk who has ever called your program, at least in the time I've been listening to you, since 2006. He even makes some of the right-wingers who call you look relatively good. On last night's show, Blue was again criticizing Americans who haven't gotten out in the streets. You know, those of us who have jobs that we are desperately trying to hold on to, because this economy no longer offers any job security, or those of us who have small children, or those of us who are caring for elderly parents, or those of us who have other such trivial, quote-unquote, obligations that prevent us from hopping on a plane to Washington, D.C. in the middle of the week to take part in a protest. I really wish you would have hit Blue with a question about what he is contributing to the betterment of society. Because as far as I can tell, his primary activities are traveling around the world and calling into your program to share his self-absorbed, minutia-laden stories, which he seems to think your listeners find fascinating. I'm sure he believes that he is providing us poor, ignorant, sheltered Americans with an education. But as I've said several times before, he needs to be reminded that he is addressing listeners of The Malloy Show! Truth seekers are, by and large, a very savvy bunch, and many of us find Blue's commentaries condescending and offensive. My stepdad, who immigrated to the United States 5 years ago, often says it is far too quiet in this country. However, because he lives here, he knows the challenges most people are facing in their day-to-day lives. It would never occur to him to criticize Americans in the dismissive, condescending, and offensive manner Blue does. As someone who has never lived in the United States and seemingly hasn't spent much time here either, Blue has not earned that privilege. P.S. For a brief moment during the podcast, I thought that maybe there was a God, because when you came back from the break, Blue was gone. Praise be and hallelujah. We'll be right back. Yeah, we'll check your car. Say it's not funny. I think we were on the same boat back in 1694. Thank you. guy, just because he evokes so much controversy and because I get tired sometimes of kicking the hell out of right-wingers and embarrassing them and pointing out their idiocies and their inability to react except out of fear and loathing. Because of all that, I've got two more emails here about Blue. And, I kind of like his phone calls. I mean, I can appreciate what Kay had to say, and I can appreciate what Tom and Joshua Tree has to say here. And the main coyote, who also has emailed. Let me do the main coyote. She says, "Hi, Mike. Your caller Blue seems to elicit a visceral response from some of the progressives that listen to your show. My understanding is that Blue's a pilot of some sort, a traveler, who's interested in gleaning information from the destinations that he finds himself in. He then uses that to arm himself to call your show, as he did last night, to consistently criticize American progressives and liberals. If I didn't know better, I think he was some sort of relative of Rupert Murdoch's. He seems to display a limited perspective of American progressives based on shallow knowledge, and then he draws cursory conclusions based on this trivial and superficial information. He concludes, apparently, that we are a nation of people, quote, staying home and trading nasty messages about the regime on email and figuring that's quite enough, end quote. I truly have no idea who Blue is referring to with that statement. If Blue is so interested in perpetuating false stereotypes of American progressives, shouldn't he be busy wrestling alligators somewhere? Could it be that Blue just likes the attention he gets from periodically telling us his whereabouts? Or possibly he is harboring a secret desire to be an American citizen, like his country mate Murdoch? At any rate, his motives are unclear to me. Whatever his reason, I wish Blue, with all of his resources, I wish Blue would dig deeper and learn who we progressives truly are and all the efforts we engage in on behalf of the progressive agenda. I would also really like to know if Blue has sponsored one or more hours of the Molloy Show to date. Tell Blue it can be done very easily using the Internet. Signed, Kathy in Maine, a.k.a. Maine Coyote. Okay. Now, Tom in Joshua, California. Hi, Mike. Blue has all the right ideas, but what he does not grasp, only because he's not living in this hellhole called America, is that America is not a homogeneous society. We are a nation of fragmented subcultures that all have, each has its own history and its own mythic principles that do not pertain to the current American dilemma. The only thing that holds us together is the television. And that, more than anything, is what puts us all to sleep. In America, people do not give a damn about freedom because everybody is scraping for a loaf of bread or a bowl of rice or a plate of beans. And when they are fed, they will buy blue jeans made by Chinese slaves with the label Freedom, or go out and buy a Jeep Cherokee called Liberty. And this is the problem. We are inherently divided. Unlike those other successful revolutions, we do not speak Polish or Czech. America can hardly speak at all, with 40% illiteracy and all methods and modes of communications in the hands of corporations. And now, the Internet has even been appropriated, and this time next year, it's iffy if we will even be able to send email. And last but not least, America is fundamentally as heartless as a religion that has strangled the hearts and minds of at least 70% of Americans who adamantly deny evolution, global warming, or even oppression, and consider it all in their God's hands, who will reward them once they're dead. It is a hypnotic insanity that has shattered all rules of understanding. We as a people have never been here before. The books have not been written on this category of mass delusion, because researchers do not have the language to even begin to quantify the enormity of this quiet hysteria that is killing the world. That is the problem. Tom in Joshua Tree, California. Yeah. All right, we'll be back. No, we're not ready to break yet? Oh, okay. I guess not. We're getting damn close to it. By the way, This hour is sponsored by Holly Hunter. Happy birthday, she writes, to John Mesikelski from his girlfriend Holly, who loves him very much. John Mesikelski, your girlfriend Holly, loves you. We love her, too, because she sponsored all 3 hours tonight. We love you, Holly! Now can we take a break? What, we still have 4 seconds? 3, 2, go. We'll be right back.
Back a few months ago, I was heading a great big nightclub. And he put me up a couple of days early. I came in a couple of days early, and they put me up at what they call the Star Suite. Now here I am, headliner in one of the biggest nightclubs in the country, and I wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning in this Star Suite, all by myself. Yeah, that's what I said. Aw. But I did what I've always done, man, to cheer myself up. I picked up a guitar, I sat down and wrote me a little song. Now this is how it feels to be alone at the top of the hill and trying to figure out why. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. I can't wait to look in the mirror.
Just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour, and this hour is sponsored by Holly Hunter. She writes, happy birthday to John Mesikelski from his girlfriend Holly, who loves him very much. All right, this is the last one. I swear to God, this is the last one about Blue. Until the next time he calls in, I guess. This is from AJ, the Music Factory. Hey, Mike, I'm afraid I don't agree with Kay, whose stuff I generally love, about Blue. His manner may be a bit difficult to tolerate for some. However, as a citizen of the planet and as one of the billions of people who continually get effed by the United States in one way or another, I would say that he has, in fact, quote, earned the privilege, end quote. Please let's step over the arbitrary political boundaries that we all remember from fifth grade geography and understand that the world is now very small and what one does here affects how one lives there. Better dead than red, the Music Factory. P.S. Blue, you could use just a wee bit of work on your approach. Okay. Jeff sent me an email, and he also included is a postage stamp. I didn't forward it to you, Kathy. It's a forever stamp. It's a permanent forever stamp. Guess who's on it? Reagan. Anyway, Jeff writes, Mike, naturally, Washington, D.C. is still enamored with the shyster that set the stage for the death of the middle class. This reminds me of how many Russian citizens missed the good old Stalin days. You'd be proud of me when this GE frontman was governor of California. He made an appearance on Johnny Carson's show. I was seated up in the peanut gallery, and he began his rant against marijuana. So I yelled very loudly, boo! The security had a fit. I despise this two-bit actor, a sellout that went from a Democrat to a Republican frontman. Brother, did he sell America a bill of toxic goods? P.S. No, I don't dye my hair. It's rough being real personally, pointedly, explicitly pissed off at Ronald Reagan, since I and a lot of us know his son, Ron Jr. It's just, I don't know, it's just kind of difficult. Back in Germany in the 20s and 30s, maybe before, maybe after, I don't know. But I know it was very prevalent, especially in the 20s and 30s. Germans don't date Jews. Germans didn't rent apartments to Jews. Germans, I'm talking about non-Jewish Germans. Germans didn't have any truck with Jews at all if they could avoid it. Well, guess what? A letter from about 30 prominent rabbis' wives is causing a stir in Israel today because it urges Israeli girls not to date Arabs. The open letter comes 3 weeks after the uproar caused by another letter, which was written by 50 state-appointed rabbis and told Jews not to rent or sell property to non-Jews. The letter was initiated, this latest one, by the head of Lehava, an extreme right-wing group that says it aims to prevent the assimilation of the Jewish people and works at saving Jewish girls from Arab villages. The head of Israel's reform movement, Rabbi Gilad Kariv, harshly condemned the letter and said, quote, Israeli society is falling into a deep, dark pit of racism and xenophobia. More than 30 female rabbis from the Reform Movement published a counter letter harshly condemning the one released Wednesday. Rabbi Kariv also called on Prime Minister Netanyahu and Justice Minister Yaakov Nierman to speak out against it. Religion, ain't it great? I mean, isn't it the most twisted extension of human madness, religion? It's just like a direct projection of, I would think, everything that the human species should try to eliminate from its own existence, from the planet. Religion, madness. A couple of weeks ago, at the White House Correspondents Association dinner, a couple of months ago, it was back in May, Obama said something. We commented on it that night. It was very reminiscent. Remember George Bush at this same dinner a couple of years earlier, several years earlier, Bush had a video made that showed him looking around the White House for the weapons of mass destruction. The dog was looking. Barney was looking, and Bush was commenting, are they over there, Barney? How about under here? Are they over there, Barney? And most people on the progressive or liberal side of the equation were appalled. Well, I didn't hear too many people on the liberal side of the equation screaming about what Obama said at the White House Correspondents Association dinner back in May. He spotted the teen pop band, the Jonas Brothers, out in the audience. And he said, referring to his daughters, Sasha and Malia are huge fans, but boys, don't get any ideas. Two words for you. Predator drones. You will never see it coming. End quote. Now, the crowd laughed. Obama smiled. The dinner continued. Very few people question the wisdom of making such a tasteless joke. The U.S. Commander-in-Chief showing such casual disregard for the countless lives lost abroad through U.S. drone attacks. Mehdi Hassan, writing at The Guardian of the U.K., writes, from the moment he stepped foot inside the White House, Obama set about expanding and escalating a covert CIA program of targeted killings inside Pakistan using Predator and Reaper drones armed with Hellfire missiles. Who comes up with these names? Oh, well. Who?
Cheney.
all this had been started by the Bush administration in 2004. On January 23rd, 2009, just 3 days after being sworn in, Obama ordered his first set of airstrikes inside Pakistan. One is said to have killed four Arab fighters linked to al-Qaeda, but the other hit the house of a pro-government tribal leader, killing him and four members of his family, including a five-year-old child. Obama's own daughter, Sasha, was seven at the time. But as Mr. Hassan writes, America's Nobel Peace Prize-winning president did not look back. During his first 9 months in office, he authorized as many aerial attacks in Pakistan as George W. Bush did in his final 3 years. You get that? In 9 months, Obama ordered as many of these strikes as Bush did in 3 years. And this year has seen an unprecedented number of airstrikes. Forget Mark Zuckerberg or the iPhone 4. 2010 was the year of the drone. According to the New America Foundation think tank in Washington, the number of U.S. drone strikes in Pakistan more than doubled in 2010 to 115. That's an astonishing rate of around one bombing every 3 days inside a country with which the U.S. is not at war. This is like the Cambodian incursions ordered by Nixon. This is insanity. It's just, and God forbid that anybody should bring this up. God forbid that anyone should point out the fact that Barack Obama is more of an instigator, an invader, a perpetrator of these killings than Bush ever was. Oh, we're not supposed to say that, are we? These attacks, Mr. Hassan writes, may have succeeded in eliminating dangerous militants, but the truth is that they also kill innocent civilians indiscriminately and in large numbers. According to the New America Foundation, 1 in 4 of those killed by drones since 2004 have been innocent. The Brookings Institute, however, has calculated a much higher civilian-to-militant ratio, 10 civilians for every militant. Meanwhile, figures compiled by the Pakistani authorities suggest U.S. airstrikes killed 700 people between January 26 and April 2009, of which 14 were al-Qaeda and 687 were civilians. Why do they hate us? Maybe that's part of the reason. And still, these filthy, brain-dead, stupid-ass Republicans still refer to Barack Obama as a liberal, a progressive, a Muslim. Jesus. What's the point of even responding to that, right? We'll be right back.
Toe-to-toe, touch and go. Give a cheer, get your souvenir. People running around in circles, don't know what they're headed for. Everybody's quiet and peace on earth, just as soon as we win this war.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It is 10 before the hour, and this hour is sponsored by Holly Hunter. She writes, happy birthday to John Mesikelski from his girlfriend Holly, who loves him very much. It's very sweet. Dennis Kucinich. Have you heard about this? His congressional district may be eliminated. That's the way you fight liberals and progressives. You come up with a veto-proof majority in a state legislature, and then you just gerrymander the districts and get rid of everybody. The New York Times, Newsweek, and Fox News, this is from Dennis, have all recently headlined stories that I may lose my congressional seat, not through an election, but through redistricting. Due to the new census figures, Ohio will lose 2 seats in Congress. The Ohio legislature, all Republican pretty much, will redraw the map with 16 instead of 18 districts for the 2012 election. Speculation in Ohio is that my district may be eliminated, absorbed into parts of other districts. Keep in mind, given the early Ohio primary, the filing deadline could be only a year away. He goes on to say, this is at his website, I believe. Well, he sent it out to his mailing list. You've helped to make possible my presence in the Congress through 7 terms and carried me through some hotly contested elections. I'm very grateful for your continued support. In light of the strong chance that my district may be eliminated, my continued presence in Congress to work for everything we care about will obviously call for a much different strategy. I will not wait until a new Ohio map is produced to begin this crucial discussion of the consequences of congressional redistricting. I will not wait until the Ohio legislature produces a new map to start thinking of the options. The question will not be who's my opponent. The question will be where is my district? Seriously. Please participate in this discussion. He's got, you can go to advice, A-D-V-I-C-E, advice@kucinich.us, advice@kucinich.us. You know, it's just the fear and the loathing and the idiocy of conservatives and right-wingers and teabaggers and I've said it a million times. That's the part that just drives me insane, is their cowardice. Bunch of goddamn babies, thumb-sucking, hair-twisting, bedwetting babies, cowards. When they can't get their way, they're libertarians. We talked about this last night. You know, when they can't get their way, they do what Robert Warwick did. They just blow up the building. Or they go sulk. They sit around for a year and do nothing. We're not going to do nothing. Oh, my God. All right, I've got something here. We're going to take some calls tonight, too, so stick around. All the focus on Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. Where's the focus on Henry Kissinger? As pointed out, where did I get this? I guess Think Progress is posted today at Think Progress. How American media continually dismiss Henry Kissinger's long history of complicity in human rights abuses. That's the way they have it titled. Also, his complicity in outright murder, overthrowing duly elected governments. I mean, Kissinger makes, and this is difficult to do, but he does it. Kissinger makes Dick Cheney look like a punk-ass vampire that he is, nothing more and nothing less. Dick Cheney is, or I'm sorry, Henry Kissinger is a world-class murderer. How old is he? About 80? He's in his 80s? Hopefully his ass won't be around too much longer either. I mean, when these people finally die, the air on this planet is going to instantly clear up a bit. You know, it really is. People like Cheney, people like Kissinger. Hell, there was an uptick in oxygen content when Nixon died. But these two, but I'm focusing on Kissinger. Kissinger is a madman. He is a classic Dr. Strangelove. He is an absolute madman and has been influencing, if not dictating, American foreign policy for so long. I mean, this son of a bitch's history goes back into the 50s. And you know what happened during the 60s. Earlier this month, maybe you heard the audio tapes from the Nixon White House, more that revealed the goddamnedest exchange between Nixon and Kissinger, who was then Secretary of State. In the tapes, Kissinger responds to an appeal made by an Israeli leader, Golda Meir, to Soviet leaders to allow the immigration of Russian Jews to Israel. And Kissinger tells Nixon that, quote, the immigration of Jews from the Soviet Union is not an objective of American foreign policy. And if they put Jews into gas chambers in the Soviet Union, it's not an American concern. Maybe a humanitarian concern. Maybe a humanitarian concern. Son of a bitch. Since these comments were revealed to the public, There was a little tiny uproar in the media with the New York Times writing that the tape showed that Kissinger was brutally dismissive of human rights concerns related to Soviet Jews. Well, it wasn't just to Soviet Jews. Kissinger is a murderer. He's a classic. He's like Hannibal Lecter, a classic amoral individual who can commit the most atrocious crimes either against one person like Salvador Allende or against an entire nation like Vietnam. It doesn't make any difference to Kissinger. And he doesn't follow the old Stalinist line that one death is a tragedy, a thousand deaths is a statistic or whatever the hell that is. This guy is a madman. And I just want to get into this a little bit when we come back. So stick around. All right. Henry Kissinger. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Jim Cook.
This hour is sponsored by Holly Hunter in honor of the birthday of John Mesikowski, who hates the Republicans as much as Mike does. Thank you, Holly. In the video chat room, Bob Kincaid is there, who has the Head On Radio Network. If you get some kind of satisfaction from this program, then you should listen to his. It's online. And normally it's on, what, Kathy, right after ours? It continues on the stream from White Rose. Is that right? Okay. Head On Radio Network. Is that it? Headonradionetwork.com. Headonradionetwork.com. So if you're not familiar with that program, check it out. All right, Henry Kissinger. Kissinger has been a burr under my saddle for probably 40 years. Now, I consider that statement sometimes. I think, Jesus, your life is that empty that you focus on Henry Kissinger for 40 years? No, I don't focus on him. But to know that there is somebody like that who is dictating American policy. To know that that person gets away with everything that they get away with is... Wait a minute here. I'm almost there. Hold on a second. There's something I have to do here. There we go. Okay. I'm sorry. Just had to get rid of a troll. It's fairly easy to do. To know that somebody like Henry Kissinger is alive and, dictating U.S. policy, even now. He's in his mid-80s, I think. And this guy is just an absolute... The fact that he's a German Jew is astonishing to me. Especially about his statement that he made to Nixon, that the death, the execution, the gassing of Jews in the Soviet Union was not anybody's, you know, it was not an American issue. But let's take a look at Kissinger. Starting with Bangladesh. And we can go back before that to Vietnam. But let's start in 1971 in Bangladesh, which at the time was called East Pakistan. It declared its independence from Pakistan. The Pakistani military responded with a brutal military campaign that included massive killings and the estimated systematic raping of nearly 200,000 Bangladeshi women. When the consul general, that's our guy, Archer Blood, that was his name, and other American diplomatic staff began to protest the Pakistani army's behavior in Washington, Nixon and Kissinger fired him. During the height of the atrocities, Kissinger sent a message to Pakistan General Yahya Khan congratulating him on his, quote, delicacy and tact in his military campaigns in Bangladesh. When Kissinger received word that massive famines were going to spring up in the country in 1971, he warned the U.S. Agency for International Development to avoid helping, saying that Bangladesh was, quote, not necessarily our basket case, end quote. Soon after becoming Secretary of State, Kissinger downgraded the American diplomatic staff who had signed onto a protest of Pakistani atrocities in 1971. Henry Kissinger, complicit in the rape of 200,000 women. Cambodia. Kissinger was one of the chief masterminds of the Nixon administration's secret and illegal bombing campaign of Cambodia. He wanted the bombing of, quote, his words, anything that flies, anything that moves, and warned that it must be secretly done to avoid congressional scrutiny. The extent of which was not discovered until President Bill Clinton declassified related documents in the year 2000. We're talking about stuff that happened in the late 60s. By the end of the American bombing campaign of Cambodia, the country was perhaps the most heavily bombed country in history, Cambodia. The bombing killed more than 500,000 people and were a major factor in the rise of the genocidal Khmer Rouge. Henry Kissinger, complicit in the mass killing of 500,000 Cambodians. Chile. In 1973, Kissinger aided and abetted a right-wing military faction that deposed the democratically elected government of Salvador Allende. The faction then installed the dictator General Augusto Pinochet, who went on to torture and murder tens of thousands of peaceful dissidents in the country. Kissinger said, quote, I don't see why we need to stand by and watch a country go communist due to the irresponsibility of its people, end quote. What he was referring to, the irresponsibility, this is the same thing that the Israelis and the Americans said after the Gazans elected Hamas leadership. The irresponsibility of its people is what happens when people go to the polls and don't vote the way the Americans, or in the case of Gaza, the Israelis, or in the case of Zimbabwe, or pick a country. I'm not picking here strictly on America and Israel. Most dictatorial regimes will do that. Most oppressive regimes, most occupying regimes will do that. And if there's anything that the United States wanted in 1973, it was not to have a social democratic government in Chile. International Telephone and Telegraph, AT&T, and there were several mega American corporations. Don't forget where this country was in the 70s. We were not in the best financial shape. And American corporations were starting once again, as they had done for the past century, to move south and to take over the parliaments, the governments, through money, through clandestine methods, through secret methods of all these different countries, so that they could commit their capitalism as brutally as they wanted to. And Salvador Allende, when he was elected, with a plurality, he did not have a majority. I think he had 47% of the vote, which is more than Clinton had in this country. But one of the first things he talked about doing was nationalizing, taking back from capitalist American corporations assets that belonged to the Chilean people. And for that reason, Kissinger stood by and had him assassinated. Due to his complicity, Kissinger's complicity in bringing Pinochet to power, Kissinger was summoned for questioning and has arrest warrants out in his name in Chile, Argentina, and France. Since the warrants were issued, this cowardly son of a bitch does not return to any of those three countries. Well, I would think not. If there's one thing that a mass killer, whether it's Henry Kissinger, George Bush, Pol Pot, it doesn't make any difference who it is, the one thing they do not want is to be brought up on charges, to be put before a court of law, to be judged by a jury. We'll be right back.
You ain't know the life I've been living, people. Oh, Lord, for a good many years. Sound like to me I can hear this morning, people. The death bell ringing all in my ear.
And the time to stop.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malone.
Or something, right? 21 past the hour. And this hour is sponsored by Holly Hunter in honor of the birthday of John Mesikowski, who hates Republicans as much as Mike does. Thanks, Holly. Getting back to Kissinger, Indonesia and East Timor. In 1975, President Gerald Ford and Kissinger met with Indonesia's leader, General Suharto. During the meeting, Ford and Kissinger essentially gave full approval to Suharto to invade neighboring East Timor. In the resulting invasion, hundreds of thousands of Timorese civilians were massacred. Kissinger repeatedly denied that he had such conversations with Suharto, but these denials were found to be false after the declassification of government documents in 2001. The murder of hundreds of thousands in Indonesia and East Timor, and Kissinger revealed as a filthy, warmongering, murderous liar. How do these sons of bitches manage to stay alive as long as they do? Why is Kissinger still walking the earth? He has a consulting firm, doesn't he? How to rape, pillage, and murder. Kissinger was asked to head the 9/11 Commission. Remember that? He was going to head it, and when it turned out he had to reveal his financial connections, he refused. This is a son of a bitch that should have been removed from society a long time ago, if ever there was a war criminal loose in the United States. It's Henry Kissinger, and nobody cares. Nobody cares. And this is why we are in the situation we are in, America. Do you not understand this? Do you not understand? Is it Newton's first law or second law of physics? Action, reaction. And to the ancients, that was called karma. It's balance. Henry Kissinger, Dick Cheney, Dick Nixon, a whole clutch of Republicans have brought more chaos and destruction to America because of their actions around the world. Does nobody get this? Does nobody understand why you take the stop? You want to have an interesting moment. Stop somebody tomorrow on the street and say, "Hey, who's Henry Kissinger and what did he do?" And I'll bet you don't get an answer. Now, go to any of these countries. Go to Indonesia. Go to Iraq. Go to Chile. Go to Bangladesh. Go to Cambodia. Go to Vietnam. And stop anybody on the street and ask them who Henry Kissinger was. Go to the Middle East. Go to Russia. Jesus, okay, Iraq. In 1975, Kissinger both encouraged a Kurdish revolt against Saddam Hussein and then abandoned the rebels to be killed following invocations from the Shah of Iran. Bob Woodward's book, State of Denial, revealed that Kissinger was a major Iraq policy advisor to President George W. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney. He warned Bush speechwriter Michael Gerson of the same analogy he used during the Vietnam years, that troop withdrawals would be like salted peanuts to the American public. The more U.S. troops come home, the more will be demanded. Woodward writes that when Gerson asked Kissinger why he supported the war, Kissinger replied, "Because Afghanistan wasn't enough." He went on to say, "In the conflict with Islam, they want to humiliate us, and we need to humiliate them." In Manhattan, his position got him into trouble, particularly at cocktail parties, he noted with a smile. That's according to Bob Woodward. Kissinger, Vietnam. Kissinger, in a possible violation of the Logan Act, helped scuttle peace talks in 1968, prolonging the Vietnam War to advantage Richard Nixon in the presidential election that year. This extension of the war cost thousands of American lives and those of more than a million people in Indochina. I mean, Henry Kissinger is a German-American Jewish Nazi. He is as bad as anything that Hitler put together sans the military. No army. Kissinger was one of those evil bastards who works behind the scenes, who manipulates people into death and destruction, chaos, murder, mayhem, and then sits around on his ample ass and advises people and makes tons and tons of money giving advice to people on how to commit murder and mayhem. Given all of Kissinger's history, his comments about Soviet Jews is not surprising. But nobody, as pointed out at Think Progress, nobody, in American media, holds this son of a bitch accountable. But Julian Assange, we'll be back. Stay with us. Oh, the phone lines are open if you want to call in. 877-996-2556. Sometimes I'm glad, but all of this violence is killing me. Silence is failing me. No, no, don't do that. Oh, don't do that. It takes a lifetime to learn what's been lost. Why are we all fighting?
Gentle into that good night.
Rage, Rage Against the Flying Monkey Right with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. And this hour is brought to you by Holly Hunter. In honor of the birthday of John Mesikowski, who hates the Republicans as much as I do. Ooh, thank you, Holly. To the phones. Claudia is in Berkeley, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, Claudia.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I was calling, Mike. You were I don't know if it's over now, but you were talking about Kissinger and Bangladesh. And
yeah.
I'm a faculty member at UC Berkeley, and I've worked with a wonderful, incredible group of students for a period of years on tracing what the U.S. was doing in Bangladesh from the beginning of independence, and I think it shed some light on why we bothered supporting everything that happened there. Very briefly, if you want to hear.
Sure.
Yeah, it's really that the U.S., as I'm sure most of your listeners know, plays the lead role in the World Bank, to put it mildly. And the World Bank and Asian Development Bank, et cetera, and USAID began spearheading about a $30 billion loan, set of loans over the next couple, about 2.5 decades, on the most toxic industries in the world to be all developed in Bangladesh.
Mm-hmm.
So we traced every grant to every single place in Bangladesh for every single one of those years. The big ones, of course, would be things you'd predict, the things we don't want to do here. The leather industry was like, it's all heavy metal, so seriously, directly lethal stuff. Leather industry with chromium and so forth. The textile industry, which is just filled with dyes of heavy metals. And that's all driven by the garment industry, many people know about there, but huge textile industries in these big export processing zones, cement, fertilizer manufacture. How about ship breaking, meaning taking the most toxic ships in the world to break them up there by slaves with the most incredible conditions imaginable, et cetera. So we're talking $30 billion, and it's not grants, it's loans.
Right.
So people there, of course, are taking out loans and paying for their own debts with interest and fees over these period of years. So it's pretty incredible stuff. We're going to be releasing it all in the spring. So I'd like people to stay on to it, and we'll release it on probably, certainly PowerPoint, YouTube. Glad to send it to you if you would post any of it and anything like that.
I would definitely, Claudia, when that report comes out, if you'll send us a link to it, I'd be happy to post it. Once again, it is astonishing and appalling at the same time how little we Americans know about what is being done, literally in our name.
It's extraordinary. All of this is called aid.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It was actually the majority of the whole GDP of the bloody country was aid,
right.
But aid in the form of loans and loans for these toxic industries.
It's heartbreaking. Claudia?
It is really, truly heartbreaking when you see these little boys and girls standing in chromium water. I mean, I have incredible video, of whole villages in blue water, literally with the chickens eating leather scraps, you know, and the kids, you know, walking through this stuff without schools, just garbage in all directions. The homes built on bubbling black water and, you know, garment factories where you see textile mills built on the garment factory industry with dyes of all different colors pouring into the waters of Bangladesh. And then we talk about the natives are multiplying like rabbits. The natives are not multiplying like rabbits. It was the worst health crisis in the world. And I should add one other thing that I think is important for everybody. About every 6 months, you read on all the front pages of papers, the world's worst toxic crisis in the world is the arsenic crisis, the naturally occurring arsenic in Bangladesh. I think what our group has shown is this is not a naturally occurring arsenic that decided to start washing out of the nice geologic strata up the Ganges and Brahmaputra rivers all of a sudden in the 70s. It was right after independence, the toxic industries with heavy metals that are all just like arsenic. So these people are literally living in a toxic soup created by these loans for all these toxic industries. And I think that's incontrovertible. I think that the World Bank and others, which orchestrate these press releases about naturally occurring arsenic, have never proven it, and there's a reason they haven't.
Well, I look forward, if that's the right way to put it, to this report you're going to put out, Claudia. Thank you so much for checking
in. I'm really happy. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Thank you. You know, it's the same thing we've talked about so many times on this program over the past 2.5 decades. And that is how the rest of the world relates and deals with what our capitalist organizations put out there for them to deal with. Americans, we don't have a clue. And any time an organization or some group from academia or a progressive a human rights organization tries to get the truth out, they're immediately labeled as, I don't know, pick something. What? Back in the day, it used to be they would be immediately labeled as communists or America haters or leftists or what have you. But the truth is so shocking. It is so brutal. And the rest of the world knows this. Travel in Central America and talk to old people about the United States and see what you get. Travel to Southeast Asia and talk to old people, people who still remember. The younger people still don't get it. They don't understand what is going on with lead poisoning and chromium poisoning, as Claudia pointed out, and all the chemicals in these dyes. And it is a form of economic genocide that just doesn't stop. I just read something about the maquiladoras in northern Mexico up against the borders of the United States, thanks to the Republicans and Bill Clinton, NAFTA, and what has happened there. These thrown together cardboard constructed houses that were going to provide housing for people going to work in all the factories that would leave America, which they did. And then the corporations found out that it could get even cheaper labor in China or Vietnam or someplace else, the Mariana Islands. So now the slums, the drug gangs, the terrorists who have inhabited these makeshift towns just across the border from cities in Texas I don't know how to talk about it. I really don't. By the way, the consensus is we are going to get a copy of Brave New World and start reading that first of the year, which will be next Monday. We're just going to do it. Probably the second hour. We'll do it the way we did the reading in 1984. And from about 34 past the hour until the next break, which is about, what, 50? We'll do it. We'll read it. Or 45, 46, whatever.
Now, how are we going to handle all the different characters?
Well, we're not going to do. There were only two voices, well, three voices in 1984. It was O'Brien, Winston Smith, and
Julia.
Those are the only three voices.
So how are you going to do Brave New World?
Well, we're not going to do the voice. I'll just do them. I'll just read it straight like a straight reading instead of trying to. The reason it was so effective when you played Julia, when you read Julia's lines, is because for the first how many chapters, it's just the narrator talking in a male voice. And then when Julia finally speaks.
I don't get to be a beta. I don't get to say I.
You want to be an alpha, an alpha plus?
No. The main character in that was a beta. She was glad she was a beta.
She was. She was very happy. Like she said, was and will make me ill. Half a gram and I just am. Soma. And the hell of it is.
Soma vacation.
There's a Soma on the market now.
A Soma pregnancy.
There is a Soma.
That's right.
Don't you want to be free? But I am free.
Alphas have to think so much. I'm glad I'm a beta.
Yeah, we need to read it. Phone calls. Dylan is in New York City. Hello, Dylan.
Hey, Mike. Thanks a lot for taking my call. And
sure.
Happy solstice and New Year's season to you and yours.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Back at you.
I want to make a comment about Henry Kissinger, but before I do, I have to take this moment and thank you for being possibly the only sane voice left in America. And you give a lot of us out here who are, feel so lost in the woods and disenchanted and disenfranchised, from what should be our movement and our party and our country, you at least let us know that, you know, not all hope is lost.
Well, that's very kind, but I'm, you know, there are a lot of voices like mine. They may not have a microphone, but like yours, a lot of voices like mine. It's just trying to find each other. That's the hard part.
Well, and thank goodness for the internet and satellite radio, because we're
Amen.
All starting to find each other.
That's true.
But, you know, you made a comment about the left wing not wanting to talk about Henry Kissinger. Well, I found out 2 years ago that Kissinger gave Obama his first job, and then I've been tracking a lot of this because my big beef is with all these war criminals, and there is a lot of connections between those two, and they've had a ton of interaction. So might that explain why certain elements don't want to speak out about this?
I think so. Hey, hold on a second, Dylan. Let me put you on hold. We'll come right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Taking all our freedom in the name of terrorism. Now you wanna buy my rack. It's funny, I never hear about Osama no more. You created a new war. Trying to finish what daddy started. More blood for oil, genocide and turmoil. Since you stole the 2000 election, you've been campaigning. Watch the...
Flying Monkey Right. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. The phone number here is 877-996-2556 if you want to join in. All right, we're talking to Dylan in New York City about the connection between the war criminal and mass killer Henry Kissinger and our young, rather naive president, I would imagine, Barack Obama. I'm assuming he's naive. I don't think Obama is evil. I think Kissinger is. You know what I'm saying?
You know, I would completely agree, and that's why my belief is that hopefully we can get some candidates who don't come up through the system, real outsiders who share our common belief and aren't corrupted by the money and power that puts them in place.
Do you think that can happen?
I think it can happen, Mike, if we start on the local level. You know, small areas, small groups. I mean, what is the old saying? A rolling stone gathers moss. And I think that's what we have to do. We have to have a longer term view, as sad as it sounds. I don't think the change will ever truly happen in my lifetime, and I'm only 40.
What do you think of this rumor that all of a sudden has popped up that Alan Grayson, the congressman from Florida who was beaten by a teabagger, that Alan Grayson may challenge Obama from the left in the primaries in 2012?
You know, I would actually kind of support it, because Grayson, certainly at least from my research, doesn't seem to have some of the connections to a lot of the old guard and the people that we would want to support or say what we want to hear. I guess that's been the biggest thing that's burnt me over the years, is I've had to learn to not just listen to what someone says and find out who they are behind what they tell me.
That's true. All right. Thanks, Dylan.
Thanks, Mike. Have a great new year.
You too. Stay in touch. Yeah, Grayson is going on this cruise, this progressive cruise in February. And that is going to give me a chance. I'm going to talk to him. I really do. The only problem I have with Alan Grayson is his position on the Palestinians. Same with Anthony Weiner of New York. The only problem I have with these people, so many American Jews have this mindset against the Palestinians, and I've I've got to know. I've got to know why that mindset exists. And you needn't tell me, you needn't send me an email and say, well, Mike, the 67 war, or Mike, the war against the British mandate. I want to know why So many American Jews, not a majority, I don't think it's a majority, but so many American Jews who wind up in politics adopt an attitude, a Likudnik attitude, the Likud party in the Israeli government, of no mercy, no recognition, nothing, except this continued oppression. I want to find out. I want to ask Alan Grayson about that. He impresses me as a man who can handle a question like that without A, falling into rhetorical excess, or B, being offended or pissed off because somebody has the temerity to ask him. Because when I saw this today about Alan Grayson, I don't know if he's considering or people are considering pushing him into challenging Obama from the left, much like Gene McCarthy did in 68 against Lyndon Johnson, until Bobby Kennedy made a move. And, of course, we all know what happened in 1968. Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger and the rest of the warmongers lied. They had enough people assassinated and murdered to clear the way so that they could assume power. And thousands more American soldiers would die, and hundreds of thousands more Vietnamese, Cambodians, Laotians would die. And I'm back to Kissinger. Gene is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hey, Gene.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Yeah, Henry Kissinger is one of those sociopaths. I don't think he identifies with anything but the oligarchy and unlimited power. He obviously is not a Jew first, nor an American citizen first. He's like a Hitler minion seeking to sit so as close as he can to the Führer.
You know, I get that impression, too. You know, why didn't Kissinger ever, this is a dumb question. I already know the answer. But I was going to say, why didn't he ever run for public office where he could have wielded power in a way like Nixon did, or like Bush did, or like Clinton did, or like Reagan did? But the answer, very simply, Kissinger is a product of dark spaces and corners and basements and shadows. He doesn't want to leave his fingerprints anyway. He wants Nixon's fingerprints to be there.
Well, he started with the Rockefeller Foundation, and he triangulated with the Rockefeller Foundation even when he was working in Nixon's cabinet. And he has always pursued their corporate, fascist, imperialist, globalist goals. Our government is hijacked by these types, and they glory in that kind of oligarchical power.
They do.
When Dylan mentioned that Kissinger got Obama a job, I'd like to know more about that. But Obama's mother was a Rockefeller Foundation employee. So that seems to be a really strong connection in my mind.
Yeah, I know there is a connection between Obama and Kissinger, and I'm not sure what it is either. But I'm sure even as we're talking about this, Gene, there are probably seven or eight people who are sending links to stories that will enlighten, you know, about that connection. Gene, thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in, okay?
Thanks.
All right, take care. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is a Malloy program. And if you're a conservative or a right-winger or a Republican or a teabagger don't like it, kiss my grits, all right? This hour is sponsored by Holly Hunter, and she writes, "Happy birthday to John Mesikelski, whom I fell in love with largely because he was the second best ranter I'd ever heard rant. With love from Holly." Thank you, Holly. Boy, Holly must love John Mesikelski. She sponsored all 3 hours tonight. Bless her heart. Jack in Shreveport writes in about the Predator drones that are causing civilian blood to be splattered all over Pakistan and Afghanistan. And I believe they're being used. Are they not? Aren't they being used in the Middle East? Jack writes, "Mike, I've brought up this point in various forums before. The use of Predator drones invariably brings to my mind the use of V-2 rockets by the Germans. It may not be a fair comparison, but characteristics such as the randomness of where the V-2s might land and the stealth of where the Predators might attack could be viewed as comparable. The Afghans still have to live with the stress of where a Predator may strike, just as a Londoner had to live with the stress of where a V-2 might randomly fall." Yeah, and I'm sure there are other analogies that could be made about how civilian populations who certainly in the last 200 years in the history of warfare, maybe forever, it's a civilian population that is most traumatized, that it's most often killed, wounded, hurt. I just hope that Americans understand and take responsibility for what we're doing. I made two jokes in one sentence. Understand what we're doing? We Americans understand what we're doing with our foreign policy? And take responsibility? Oh, no, 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 no. It's not our fault. It was the terrorists who came here and with the help of the Bush crime family. It was the terrorists who came here in an attack that took the lives of 3,000 people. And the entire operation engineered, either passively or actively, we'll never know, by the Bush administration. Osama bin Laden, determined to strike in the U.S. Well, let's ignore that one, huh, George? All right, phone calls, 877-996-2556, if you want to get into the mix. Mike is in Chicago. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing? Happy New Year.
Oh, my God. What have you got me on?
I have you on
All right. That's a little better. Go ahead.
Okay. Sorry about that.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm on a cell phone. Sorry, but...
That's okay.
Yeah, the few callers back. He's right. You know, it does have to be done. You have to start out local. That's how the Republicans did it. They won their way into the school boards and stuff like that. And, you know, how our lovely Sarah got in. That's how she got started.
Oh, yeah? School board?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
For school board. Anyway, it's so... Going back to as far as Alan Grayson is concerned,
right.
Yeah, he's my type of rich guy, and I know lawyers get a bad rap in this society also. But you know, lawyers do a lot of good, and there's a reason why they charge so much. They have to be able to save up for any kind of research that they have to do for a big case or something like that. It takes time and it takes money. He's my kind of guy.
Do you have a problem with his position on the Middle East?
Do I have a problem with what?
his position where it concerns the Israeli-Palestinian cancer?
Yeah, slightly, but I think that could be changed with time, and you know, maybe you could talk to him and kind of show him where you're coming from. I know it's not very politically it's not a politically safe position at the time when you're trying to run, to have a bias against the Israelis and a favorability towards the Palestinians.
Well, no, but being being a member of Congress up until this last election, being an American Jew, being an attorney who understands the law, certainly understands international law, and certainly understands what has been going on in the occupied territories, and based on all that, and given his attitudes and his record and his rhetoric. I have to believe that this guy really is a progressive. The only problem that I personally have, and I'm sure a lot of people have, is this position that he never said this, but the position that the Palestinians are devils and the Israeli Jews are angels and the devils have to be stomped. I'm way exaggerating, but on the other hand, the policies of the ruling party in Israel, whatever the ruling party has been absolute murder where concerned the Palestinians. And I don't understand why this issue can't be solved. And I mean, I literally don't understand. I don't to the point where a couple of years ago I said, I'm never going to talk about this on the air again because it's an unsolvable problem. I think any problem has a solution if there are, especially a political problem that seems insoluble, if people of goodwill would just work toward finding that solution. And I don't think there have been people of goodwill, working to find a, certainly not in the United States and certainly not in Israel. Now, yeah, there have been peace groups. There have been groups in both countries that have advocated for a peaceful settlement to this craziness. There have been peace groups in the Palestinian territories who have occupied territories who have advocated. But the overarching political reality is that no effort has ever really seriously been made, a sincere effort. Even the Camp David Accords put together by Jimmy Carter, none of it was ever designed to really work. And it's one of those flashpoints on Earth, political flashpoint that has brought so much chaos and destruction and political unrest. I just wish it would get over. You know what I'm saying?
I agree with that. I think, well, you know, there's too much money to be made in war.
Well, there's
whoever's fighting it.
Yeah.
And I agree with what's happening to the Palestinians is atrocious. Kind of within the same realm, if Grace, I would, you know, Grayson said that he wasn't going to run because he wanted to spend more time with his family. He's got young kids and stuff like that. And it would be nice to get somebody who's single, because you were talking about.
Hey, listen, Mike, you're getting way garbled here. We're losing you. So I'm just gonna say thanks. I do appreciate your comments, but we're starting to lose you. It sounds like you're on I-94 or something. And the signal is, and never was very good out there. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. Take care. Happy New Year. We'll be right back. Maggie comes fleet foot, face full of black soot, talking at your heat foot, plants in the bed, but the phone's tapped anyway. Maggie says the men say they must bust an early man. Orders from the DA. Look out, kid, don't matter what you did. Walk on your tiptoes, don't tie no bows. Better stay away from those that care out of fire hose. Keep a clean nose, wash your clean clothes. You don't need a weatherman to know it's better wind.
Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
And once again, thanks to Holly Hunter, who sponsors this hour. Her message, happy birthday to John Mesikelski, who I fell in love with largely because he was the second best ranter I'd ever heard rant. With love, from Holly. Thanks, Holly. Derek is in Rincon, New Mexico. Hey, Derek.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How about you?
Well, I like blue.
Well, the verdict is pretty divided on blue.
Well, you know, he's quite an eccentric character, and it's always interesting to listen to him, and he's got a kind of a very tranquil voice, you know.
So. Yeah.
But I got to be honest with you, you know, I'm really disappointed trying to contact the Democratic Party leaders here in the state before our elections, and I actually had somebody from the party say that the United States' role was to sell intellectual property and ideas, and that we're not supposed to make things anymore.
What? Who said?
Yeah, it was she was picking up the phones for the state and the headquarters in Albuquerque.
Well, surely to God she was being ironic or sarcastic.
No, she wasn't. And then I asked to speak to her supervisor, and she got real irate with me, and she said, well, I have a right to my opinion. I said, well, it sounds more like it's a Republican opinion. And I do understand there's a lot of Democrats with that global economy, you know, psyche going on. But, you know, we're here in New Mexico, and we don't have jobs. And, I mean, I'm sorry, but everybody can't build a website, you know.
Right. What is the situation in New Mexico? Give us a snapshot.
This is a horrible, horrible economy.
Are you near Santa Fe or?
No, I'm south. I'm 30 miles north of Las Cruces.
Okay.
Yeah. Basically, we've got basically a good old boy farm town here named Hatch. And, you know, they burn plastic and cardboard right there at the chili factory, you know. And I'm a volunteer firefighter, and I went down there in person and flashed my badge and had the sheriff come down and escort me off the property. I had to go to the OSHA to finally have anything done about it.
Oh, my God.
So it's kind of a banana republic in a way.
What brought you to Rincon, New Mexico?
Family out there in Las Cruces, you know, they live up out there in Cruces, and I live from San Diego, and I've owned businesses. I was a union steward at the Riviera Hotel in Las Vegas for years, and then I bought my own bar, so I've had businesses, and I'm a union man to boot, and when I had my bar, my business, I invited a union to come right in and organize, and it was wonderful. We had a great relationship, and like I said, when I had problems with employees, they were like the third baseman there, you know, we got it worked out at a table, and you know, and it was nice having, you know, that representation on both sides.
What would you say are the economic prospects in near term for Las Cruces in the area around there where you live?
Well, they had about 20 miles outside of town, they had built this big area where they were setting up factories and warehouse space to build things, and that's just been sitting empty now for the last 10 years.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and, you know, you've got to go back to that Maquiladora plan. I remember the old, back then, you know, when, I hate to say it, but Al Gore and,
Bill Clinton.
Al Gore and Bill Clinton were having the, thing with Larry King, and, they were sitting there against Ross Perot saying, oh, this is great, NAFTA. And I said, this is Al Gore saying this. So, you know, rooting right behind Bill Clinton. And at the time, we knew this was horrible. And, you know, babies born without brains in the Maquiladora because of the pollution coming down the creeks.
Right. Ross Perot is the only one who called that in that political year.
And trust me, everybody who listened, we all at work, you know, I was the union steward at the hotel, and everybody, we had bartenders, everybody knew this. I mean, it was going to be a worse of jobs leaving the country. And it was, you know, I mean, it wasn't like that was a surprise, and I don't know how Bill Clinton didn't know what was going to happen.
I think probably he did. Clinton's not a Democrat. He's not a Republican. He is in that elite group that rides over everything that we common folk have to deal with. He just skims along the top. Clinton is in that top 1/100 of 1% in terms of wealth, and he's way above that in terms of influence and so on and so forth. So I sometimes wonder if certainly Clinton knew what was going to happen. He's not a stupid man. He wasn't a stupid man 20 years ago when all this hell came to be. None of those people were stupid. stupid. They knew what they were doing. And
I think, I'm pretty sure he was dealing with China at the time of his election, too.
Probably. But this, yeah. This is one of those situations where unless people like you and me live to be 150, we're never going to know what the truth really was.
Well, the only thing that we have, I think, and like I said, our attitude with the Democrats is horrible, and that's the biggest disappointment. You know, I'm just not hearing enough. Mm-hmm. You know, they just, you sit there and you hound them, and I've had them face-to-face at the Chili Festival. Harry Teagues, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he was the congressman down here who got voted out last this election. Mm-hmm. And they don't know about alternative fuels. He doesn't know nothing about nothing. And how are we going to get our jobs here? Well, we're going to take them from another state. I mean, nobody says, let's get tariffs from China. Nobody says, we got to take a stand. Nobody.
And that's what has to happen. Derek, I hope you call in again. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Appreciate what you had to say. Thank you. We'll be right back.
I've walked and I crawled on six crooked highways. I stepped in the middle of seven side forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard rain's gonna fall.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
It is 25 before the hour. The hour is sponsored by Holly Hunter, who sends this message. Happy birthday to John Mesikowski, who I fell in love with largely because he was the second best ranter I'd ever heard rant. With love from Holly. Well, there you go, Holly. Mesikowski, you're a lucky man. Woo! Oh, no. Okay. Stan is in Boise, Idaho. Hello, Stan.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. You said, oh, no.
Say it again.
I heard you say, oh, no, and you looked at the phone or whatever, but...
Well, let me tell you why, Stan. You know, when... I don't know how long you've been listening to this program, but maybe a long time, maybe not a long time, but... You told Kathy you want to ask me why I hate the Tea Party. So that gives me all the clues that I need that... what?
Well, can I make a quick point, though? I wanted to say...
Hey, don't yell.
I mean, as far...
Stan, don't yell.
Yeah.
Don't yell.
Okay.
Okay.
I just wanted to say as far as the Ron Paul wing of the Tea Party, from what you guys were talking about earlier about Kissinger and this military-industrial complex, seems like a lot of the liberal and the Ron Paul kind of Tea Party types have a lot in common.
No.
So.
No, not at all. The points where it may appear that progressives, liberals, libertarians may intersect and agree, those are not philosophical points. Those are political points. You know, libertarians don't want involvement in foreign wars because most of them are cowards. They're terrified about going someplace and picking up a weapon. It has nothing to do with U.S.
Why do you say that?
Let me finish. It has nothing to do with U.S. exploitation of some other country. Or the invasion by the capitalists. The reason I know that is another study just came out that conservatives, which would include libertarians, have a rather have a larger amygdala than people who are progressives. Do you know what the amygdala is?
It's part of the brain that controls something.
It controls your primitive actions and reactions, including fear. The proof seems to be out there now that something I've just known instinctively for a long time, that conservatives, for the most part, are scared of their own shadows. They're scared of everything. They're scared of terrorism. They're scared of death. They're scared of, you know, if they don't live the right life, some sky spook is going to rip them to pieces and send them to hell. They're afraid of just about everything. They're afraid of their fellow countrymen. They're afraid of everything. They're afraid of government. They're afraid of no government. You know, one of the biggest screams you would hear from the average teabagger would be if all of a sudden they weren't getting their Social Security checks or their Medicare payments. So the hypocrisy, Stan, in the Tea Party is one of the reasons I hate them. I hate hypocrisy. I'd rather deal with someone who just, you know, told the truth. As ridiculous as it may be, at least I would know where that person stands. But it's only
the right wing that's actually stand up for traditionally liberal causes like the body scanners in the airports or the Ron Paul wanting to get rid of the CIA or any of that kind of stuff. The liberals are just worried about gay people having sex in foxholes. You know, that's their big concern.
All right. Well, see, what you've done now, Stan, you've demonstrated to me a depth of ignorance that makes me want to retch and vomit and spew blood all over the microphone. So based on that, I'm going to say goodbye and have a nice new year. I tell you what to do, Stan. Get real drunk and go out someplace on a deserted road where there's no traffic now. All right? You have places like that in Idaho. And get that pickup truck you drive up to about 90 miles an hour and head for one of those buttes. You know what a butte is, right? And just floor it, Stan. Just pretend like you're going to run over one of them queers won't get married. All right? Or pretend like one of them's after you. Oh, my God. The only people standing up for liberal values are conservatives. Son of a bitch. Really? No, I'm not going to bust up on old Stan. Stan is Stan. Did you see this thing about Tucker Carlson? Is there a bigger whiny ass right winger than Tucker Carlson? I mean, this guy, he's like fingernails down a chalkboard to me. He just, I don't take him seriously. You know, he's not a threat to people like Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck wants to lead a mass suicide. He's not a threat to people like Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh wants everybody to agree that they'll work for 8 cents an hour so that Russia's corporate controllers can make even more money. Tucker Carlson is just a little punk. He's just a little punk. You talk about somebody who's scared of his own shadow. Anyway, Tucker Carlson said he was on the Rupert Murdoch terrorist network. He said that he believed Michael Vick should have been executed for, the way it came up, Obama praised the National Football League team, the Eagles, for giving Michael Vick a second chance. And it was inevitable that the half-asses over at the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization would jump on that. You know, there's a couple of black guys conspiring to murder all the nation's pets. The dogs, anyway. So Tucker Carlson, on Tuesday, while filling in for another little whiny ass, Sean Hannity, Tucker said this, quote, "Now, I'm a Christian. I've made mistakes myself. I believe fervently in second chances. But Michael Vick killed dogs. And he did it in a heartless and cruel way. And I think personally he should have been executed for that. But the idea that the President of the United States would be getting behind someone who murdered dogs, that's kind of beyond the pale. You punk-ass little twit. The issue is not what Michael Vick did where it concerns killing dogs. Yes, that's a terrible thing. Is it worth a death sentence, you half-witted jerk? Michael Vick went to prison. Michael Vick damn near lost everything. Michael Vick learned a very specific lesson. And you, Tucker Carlson, you will do anything in your power to make sure that death and destruction of human beings continues. You will make certain that whatever tiny little soapbox you still have, that you use that to advocate for the policies of war, death, destruction, and aggression. But let some NFL quarterback get popped for dogfighting and for being responsible, yes, for the deaths of dogs. And you're the last just comes unglued, doesn't it, Tucker? It must have been hard to sit there in Hannity's chair doing the show knowing that if you stood up during a break to go take a pee, your ass would fall off. Man. Oh, well. Nancy is in L.A. Hey, Nancy.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Apparently, Dennis Kucinich sent out an email today. Ohio, due to the census, has lost 2 seats in the House of Representatives.
Yeah, you know, we talked. I just talked about this about 30 minutes ago. I read his email that he sent.
I have been listening, and I asked Kathy. Somehow I missed it. I apologize.
No, that's all right. That's all right. Go ahead. I just want to let you know that we are aware of it, and we did talk about it. But go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I heard him earlier speaking with Nicole Sanders, and he wants everyone to go to Kucinich.us, and he's being proactive. The map of redistricting hasn't been drawn yet, but I think he even has an email advice@Kucinich.us. Like,
yes.
What should he do?
Right.
Because he's sure they're going to just take away his whole district and redistrict.
You know, the only thing that I can think that he could do if that district disappears is just, I don't know, rent an apartment someplace in a district that has one of these half-witted Republicans and run against him. I don't know.
Well, I will send that in as an advice email. So thank you, Mike. I don't know how I missed it.
That's all right, Nancy. Good to hear from you. All right. We'll talk again. All right.
Take care,
Nancy. I wonder if Tucker Carlson, somebody in the chat room said Tucker didn't seem, it was Dwayne, said Tucker didn't seem to mind 1.5 million dead Iraqis, but he just wets his pants over a phone call regarding, thanks for giving Michael Vick a second chance. Jesus. A glass to a lot of people, but especially to the people in the Ustream chat room who are there every night and if you haven't been there, you should go. It's a great group, and some of the things that are said are extremely witty. So check them out sometime. Ustream.com and get registered and go into the chat room. But to all the people in the chat room, a glass of something, Merlot, Cabernet, tequila, Jack Black, You folks are the best. Thanks a lot for being there every night. And to the listeners of this program, the people who find this program every single night or every other night or once a week, once a month, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, I know it's been said a million times, but this show is only as good as the people who tune in and the people who email our correspondents, the folks who make it what it is. These are some weird times, and I think any effort to hang together until we can stop this move toward fascism it's got to be a good thing. So thanks, everybody, for supporting this program. I appreciate it. And so does Kathy, right? You want to say anything, dear heart? Go ahead.
Happy New Year. Drive safe. You never know who's out there, you know, careening into
your lane. All right. All right. You can cut the music. God, I hate that song. Actually, not that version, but if I hear a real schmaltzy version of that song, it's sort of like Waltzing Matilda. When I hear that song, same way, I get tears in my eyes. And Proud to Be an American, that one too, right? Free Bird.
Free Bird.
Free Bird, yeah. Yeah. but those two songs, Waltzing Matilda, and I don't know why, I'm not Australian, and Auld Lang Syne. Ron is in Prescott, Arizona. Hey, Ron.
Good evening, Mike.
Hey.
That part of the brain that you were talking about that causes conservatives to have greater fear than liberals, could that also be a cause why more conservatives believe in conspiracy theories than liberals?
It could be, although, you know, there are some conspiracy theories that I certainly subscribe to. The fact that something is a conspiracy theory doesn't necessarily make it wrong. But, you know, like Obama not being an American citizen, that to me is just, I've never heard such madness as that. And it only comes from a small amygdala or a big amygdala.
Well, I think that the Obama birth certificate is just pure racism, because everyone I know who's conservative and talks about that, they're just flat out racist. They hate blacks.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Because, you know, that thing about the part of the brain and fear, I wanted to see what you were going to say, because I know you believe in several conspiracy theories, and I thought you might be a secret conservative.
No, the theories the conspiracy theories I believe in usually involve death, the death of MLK Jr., the death of JFK.
RFK.
Oh, good God, what was that? The events of September 11th, 2001.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a conspiracy theorist. I think what you have to be is unwilling to accept, a story that just simply could not be true. Now, I know a lot of realists or purists are going to disagree with that. A lot of people will say, Mike, it's been proven over and over again that Lee Harvey Oswald fired three shots out of that rifle in 2.5 seconds, whatever it was. It was such a dead on target. He, assassinated the president of the United States. Or, yeah, this half drunk old, white guy, James Earl Ray managed to position himself in such a way that he could put a bullet into Martin Luther King Jr. And then for some reason, how nobody knows, but he wound up in England, you know, and Canada and God knows where. And then, of course, on September 11th, 2001, that all the warnings, all the indicators, all the intelligence that said Osama bin Laden to strike, determined to strike in the U.S. and all the talk about using airplanes as missiles and so on and so forth. And for some reason, on that particular day, North American Air Defense Command, our military, everybody was out to lunch. No, I'm sorry. I believe in coincidences. incidents. But these are just too astonishing for me to accept. So in terms of the conspiracy theories, yeah, I subscribe to those three. I'll never know the answer, and probably never will. You will not either. Probably no one alive today will ever know the answer to what really happened on those three events. But so, yeah, I go along with that part of conspiracy theories.
Well, I'll be listening to you next year.
Thank you, Ron. I appreciate it, man. Take care. Take care. We are flat out of time. Tomorrow night and Friday night, we will have recorded programs, pre-recorded programs, I should say. Friday night, New Year's Eve, will be Winter Solstice program that we did last week. And tomorrow night, I'm not sure, some recorded program, I'm not sure what we're going to put on, but something will be there. And again, thanks to Holly Hunter, who sponsored all 3 hours tonight. She writes, happy birthday to John Mesikowski, who I fell in love with largely because he was the second best ranter I'd ever heard rant. With love from Holly. I'd like to know who the best ranter is to Holly Hunter. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
This is Dan Tull.